Stone & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, 1025, 1063. The game streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Thanks to the law offices of Amanda J. Gentry. Live from Bridgestone Arena, Preds and Oilers tonight at 7 o'clock. Connor McDavid is in the house. And speaking of in the house with us right now, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Coach Bob Schoop. All right, Coach. We had to move you last week off of Tuesday because the Titans decided to fire their general manager. Now, I watched the game back, too. And I know you looked at the film. I watched the game back, too. And I sat there watching the game, the Jags game back, and I thought I was almost wasting my time because I had already decided for myself that the reason the team got smoked by that horrible Jags team is because the owner fired the general manager. It was a week of distractions, questions, players getting asked questions, the owner not talking about it. And when teams get distracted, just like when you were at Tennessee and you guys lost to South Carolina with all of Jalen Hurts nonsense, I just think that when teams have distractions, I hear you football people talk about how no distractions. I just felt like this was classic case of team is losing faith in itself because the owner is saying so. And a massive distraction that everybody had to deal with through the week, and they lose to a bad team at home. What did the tape say?
Without question, since you've asked me to embark on this challenge of watching these guys the last few weeks, this was the poorest performance by a mile. It really was. I think expectations were that this team was going to go out and rally and beat the Jaguars and put themselves in position to win another AFC South, championship. I don't think that's why they lost the game. I think there's two things that stood out on the film. I don't care whether you're the Tennessee Titans, the Tennessee Vols, Father Ryan High School. If you lose the turnover margin 4-0, you're not going to win the game. That's very difficult to overcome. And some of those turnovers were, in the coming out area, which gave the Jaguars a very, very short field. And the going in area right before the half when Derrick Henry fumbled on the screen pass, which was really an 8-point turnaround. They're going in potentially to score before the half. And then suddenly the Jaguars drive the field, and you hope the Titans' defense, which had played fairly well to that point, gets a stop at that point. But then, that became the backbreaker because then they return the kickoff to start the second half, like you said, which was called back, but they drive the field. Then you have the three and out. They get another score. Then it's another three and out, another score. And then they try the direct snap to Derrick Henry, which leads to a field goal, which is just a disastrous 8 to 10 minutes for sure. So that's how they lost, and that's when they lost. Now, the firing of the general manager certainly wasn't optimal, the timing of it. And I'm certain that there were distractions. I couldn't even imagine. I mean, it's, a week ago today, which is generally speaking the players' off day in the NFL, but players going home, talking to their wives, what's this mean for us? Coaches going home, talking to their families, what's this mean for us? Where are we right now? And to have a team that's, seven at that particular point, 7-5, three games ahead in the division, on point, on pace to win a division championship. And like you said before, you have a GM who, I think we did it since he's been on the job, has the 9th best record in the NFL, is on his way to a 4th straight playoff performance and a 3rd straight division title. I just think, I said it last week, I think the people who have the ownership's ear, saw a flawed roster and saw really, really bad optics, in the Philadelphia game and the former star player of this franchise going out and really embarrassing this team. And it all became one thing after the other, and that ultimately became the final straw.
So you football people all the time always say when they talk about distractions, like the idea of causing for a player to cause a distraction is almost like a felony. It's like, don't you dare bring distractions to this football team because this week we have a very big game against Appalachian Tech and we cannot afford to have 1 second of our focus away from Appalachian Tech, who is, they won 7 of their last 49 games and we can't be number 8. And then whenever distractions happen, and I feel like this happened to you guys at UT, but whenever distractions happen, then after the game, everybody has a microphone in front of their face, and they're like, no, we weren't distracted. That's not why we lost. And I'm like, if it's such a big deal to you coaches that we have no distractions no matter what, then you have a massive distraction that takes up everybody's time, especially the head coach. You can't tell me it doesn't play a factor into it.
We're human beings. I mean, it's not robots out there playing the game. I mean, every single player who's on this football team, is on the team because of John Robinson in some way, shape, or form. I mean, every player may be a different, you know, percentage of that. But, I mean, had a relationship with him. I heard Jeffrey Simmons in interviews last week saying, can we stop talking about this and start talking about the game? I mean, and Jeffrey's as locked in and focused in individuals I've ever been around. As I said, I mean, Coach Vrabel had to answer questions. The ownership didn't even come out and answer questions till the Teresa Walker interview and things along those lines, and put him in a difficult situation where he's trying to be locked in and focused and prepare his team for a big divisional game. So I'm sure there were distractions during the course of the week, but like I said to you off air, I think between those type of things and between the rah-rah speeches that occur before the game, once the ball's kicked off, football players are football players, and it locks in and they go out and execute. And on this particular day, you know, the Titans did not execute, and the Jaguars, certainly for the last 35 minutes of the game, were the much, much better team.
Do you buy in at all to, like, even driving into the stadium, when I drove in there, it felt like it was the Mike Munchak era. Now, I mean, I like Mike Munchak a lot.
Sure.
And you were at Vandy when he was there.
Sure.
And I don't know if you were still at Vandy when Ken Whisenhunt took over.
Yes.
But it was bad. I mean, it was, Bob, it was bad. You remember. It was bad. I mean, you guys were better than they were. And I felt when I drove in and there was no traffic, I felt like I was right back to the Munchak era, right back to the Whisenhunt era. And the game kind of felt like a Munchak game or a Whisenhunt game. I'm not going to say a Whisenhunt game. Those were like 42-3. But it felt like a Munchak game. And they haven't lost to Jacksonville at home since Mike Munchak was the coach. Mm. And I just – maybe it was, again, me because – I couldn't understand why they would do this in the middle of a season with a big game coming up on Sunday. But I felt like that was a giant cloud over the team, not just the entire week when I was at the facility, but when I was at the game on Sunday.
If the team's an extension of the city, it certainly is. It was a cloud. I mean, people were talking about it all week. I mean, with social media and things along those lines, as we talked about last week when I was on the show, I mean, that was the topic of a conversation every week. Not about, hey, how do we stop Trevor Lawrence? Or, hey, how do we, you know, block Arden Key coming off the edge? I mean, it was about the general manager being relieved of his responsibilities. And like I said, the timing certainly was not optimum. Unless the people who are in the ownership's ear said, listen, let's get a head start on the Senior Bowl, the Shrine Game, you know, player interviews, the combine, things along those lines. We can't be conducting a search, you know, at this point or another at the end of the season, especially with the season being extended to, you know, the first week of January now. But to your point, the optics the last 2 weeks in a league that prides itself on great parity, for a team that's leading the AFC South to get blown out and the outcome of the game to have been determined before the first snap of the fourth quarter, that's 2 weeks in a row that that's happened.
Will there ever be like a film as a coach that you're watching and you'll be dissecting it and say, well, clearly Johnny missed that throw because his mechanics weren't very good because his girlfriend dumped him on Thursday?
I've dealt in my career with 18 to 22-year-old males. These are grown men. Now,
right.
Some of them, it's a
sure.
little bit different, to be honest. I mean, the maturity level of some of the players that I've worked with have been different. And I could share stories off air that you'd shake your head at. But I think this, you know, it is funny because there's two things that I did notice watching the film. And you know, like I said, the optics were bad when you're watching the coach's copy or the All-22 and it shows the scoreboard and you see you could read the Titans in the stands, which means there's nobody sitting there. You know, that looked bad. You could hear the booing. You could hear the fire certain coaches on the air when you're watching the game on television. But the two things that I did notice, you talked about the mechanics and you just used the example of a quarterback. I do think you're looking at a quarterback who's lost a little bit of confidence in his offensive line, in maybe the system. And where I noticed it is his mechanics with his footwork are the same regardless of the depth of the routes. That's why he can hit Hooper, he can hit Kwonkwo on those short little quick ones, but when the routes go beyond 10 yards, 12 yards, 15 yards, his mechanics are exactly the same. And the reason I feel qualified a little bit to say this is when I was at Penn State, I watched Christian Hackenberg go through the exact same thing. He had lost a little bit of confidence in the offensive line, and somehow, some way, his mechanics suffered. And the other thing I noticed was the body language of some of the defensive players. Football's a weird game, you know, because in basketball, in baseball, in hockey, you play both offense and defense. But in football, you're not two separate teams, but you're two separate units. And I saw a little bit of the body language of the defense, I thought, even from the coach's film in the game. And they get that fourth down stop, you know, in the middle of the third quarter. The game's still a game at that point. And they get the fourth down stop where Weaver breaks up the pass, and it's a big stop right there. And you know, on the teams that I've been a part of that have been really good and really energetic, really enthusiastic, there's a lot of celebrating together. And on that play, it just seemed to be, nice job, jog off the field. You know, and that's the one thing that I did notice, a little bit of body language with some of the defensive players and the mechanics of the quarterback on the offensive side.
Do you think that can come from a lack of trust of the organization? I keep going over the message that was sent from the owner. If there's no misconduct, so it's not the Green Bay plane or it's not somebody lied about something, it's just they weren't happy with the direction of the team. Well, you fire the coach, and I don't think the owner spoke to the team about this, so now the head coach, who's the subordinate of the general manager, has to go in there and tell the team why they did what they did. And the message is we weren't happy with the direction of the team. Well, the players are the direction of the team, so it's like, well, hell, my organization thinks I suck.
I think any successful organization, I always say there's four parts to it. Culture, there's people, there's development of people, and then there's strategy. And the culture, everybody from the outside looking in thinks the Titans have had a great culture, no question. And when something like this happens, when big decisions are made, I don't think there was a power struggle. But I also, you know, think, I don't think Coach Vrabel heard about it at the same time the rest of us did, like might have been intimated. I do think the ownership has a responsibility to address the team and say this is what happened and this is why it happened. I don't necessarily think they have the responsibility to address us, but I do think they have the responsibility to address the team. And anytime you make a big change like this, I think you have to have a plan moving forward, and that's ultimately the question. So, like I said, I mean, ultimately when the ball was kicked off at noon on Sunday, I tend to think that the players weren't distracted and the coaches weren't distracted. I think the Jaguars went out and executed really well. And I'll say this again because I know we're going to lead into this at some point. If you said after 13 games the Titans would be two games up in their division with four games to play, regardless of how we got here, maybe you'd be excited about that. I mean, how we've gotten here is a little bit shaky because the last 3 weeks have been a steady downhill, you know, fall right there. But, you know, 2 weeks ago, the Bengals came in here as a 50-50 game against a team who might be playing the best football in the AFC. A week ago is a team that's certainly playing the best football of anybody in the NFL and did it again this week to the Giants. This week we expected, and I said to Caroline on Thursday, I said I thought without question the Titans would come out and win the game. I was very, very surprised. And as I said, the first half, you know, it's 14-13. You're in your two-minute drive. Your best player's got the ball in his hands. He's going in to get it in the red zone. He fumbles, and you expect your defense going to have his back at that point, and they drive down the field. And
DB lets the ball go right through
McCreary
his hands.
McCreary goes right through his hands. Zay Jones makes a catch in the corner for a touchdown. And then suddenly it's a downhill. Momentum's a very, very powerful thing. More in the college game, I think, because you're dealing with 18- to 22-year-old males. But in the pro game, momentum's a powerful thing. And I thought Jaguars capitalized on that momentum in the third quarter, and the Titans fell prey to that.
Coach Shoop's with us. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Coach Bob Shoop. I will say this. You might have picked the Titans. I picked the Jags on Friday. I tell you right now. And picked them in the pregame. Just saying that. Maybe I should be coach. Coach Shoop's with us. All right. The next thing. Vrabel says he's not firing anybody off the staff, including his offensive coordinator. What's Coach Shoop think about that? We'll get into that coming up next. And what the tape showed from Todd Downing and his play calling. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline wants to tell you about Caesars Sportsbook.
Yes, I do. It is time for the Caesars Sportsbook Report. Now, Caesars has tons of promos going on every day, but your very first bet with the Caesars Sportsbook app, promo or not, it's on Caesars, up to $1,250. Just sign up using the promo code RADIOFULL, one word, RADIOFULL, and then place your first bet. And if you win, that money is all yours. But if not, don't worry about it because you'll get that stake back as a free bet. Now, Argentina just defeated Croatia. We've got France and Morocco coming up tomorrow at 1 o'clock. France is favored to win, but Morocco at plus 525 odds to win. It's worth just a little bit of money. But hey, that's my take. Do it how you want to do it. Just do it with the Caesars Sportsbook app. Open to new users in Tennessee who are 21 or older. A qualifying bet loses. Bet amount returned as a credit. Must use it in 14 days. See Caesars.com/promos for full terms. Gambling problem? Call or text the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Caesars Sportsbook. We are all Caesars.
Three and out 10 times coming out of halftime. During this three-game losing streak, you've had negative 33 yards on the opening drive of the third quarter. Is that a failure to adjust coming out of halftime? What's going wrong?
No, we had some egregious penalties and mistakes. So, I mean, it's first and 22, give up a sack, and third and 27, and we don't block for a screen that nobody's going to convert, but hopefully we can help the punt team and get the screen started. So then we can use our punter to maybe change field position.
We'll
so
for the season on 10 rainouts?
You know, evaluating, you know, everything. It's execution. It's our ability to coach them and make sure that the details are fixed. And, you know, it's just not one thing.
There you go. Vrabel yesterday talking about the offense would later say on his radio show last night, no changes to the coaching staff the rest of the season. Coach Bob Shoup is with us. Let me ask you this question. Sunday against the Jags, the tape, because the film never lies, was the play calling from the Titans as bad on offense as the fans that surely were not happy about Vrabel saying no coaching staff changes? Was the film as bad as – were the fans justified, or is Vrabel right that it's the players and not the coaching?
It's a combination. But the one play call that we discussed in the last segment and you guys discussed before I came on the air, the direct snap at that point, that was a little bit – of a questionable play call, I thought. I mean, every coordinator, I promise you, someone who's called defenses for 20 years, goes back and looks at a game, and the next game, the next perfect game that I call would be the first perfect game I called. So coaches are harder on themselves than any fan or any tweeter or anything along those lines can be. I assure you that. But I'll say it again. I mean, you know, they went down the field on the very, very first drive of the game. You know, they tried a flea flicker on the opening play of the game, unsuccessfully, but it may have loosened them up for a split second. They got the running game going. I thought there was a little bit of a blend between run and pass, and that's exactly what they hope to be. So it's 7-0 to start the game. You get the ball back on the next drive, and that was the series that I thought was kind of a momentum equalizer. You know, they try to, put a Conquo on the edge to help protect in the pass game, to help Daly out. But it wasn't anything wrong with what their strategy was. It was the technique. You know, when you're chip blocking a guy or you're making a guy do something, the way I've always defended as a defensive coach is chips usually come from the second level, not a guy on the line of scrimmage. So when he was on the line of scrimmage, all he did was give the defensive end a wider path to get to Tannehill. And when he got to Tannehill, he stripped the ball, and suddenly they get the ball at the 15-yard line. It's 7-7 at the blink of an eye. And that's when all of a sudden I think the Jaguars, you know, got their confidence, got their mojo going.
Why are the Titans so bad in the second half of these games?
You know, as my experience as a defensive play caller, sometimes guys get into a rhythm on offense. And we talked about it a little bit. I think the first quarter of a game all the time as an offensive or defensive play call, you're validating tendencies. You're looking at the other opponent saying, are they doing what they expected we were going to do? And if they are, then you continue with that game plan. And there's a lot of offensive coordinators that I had a good feel, and I can't speak to whether Coach Downing is this way or not, but a good feel. I would always tell our players, listen, they may get one early on us, but once I get into the second quarter, I'm going to have a real good feel for what they're doing. And you can watch that off previous tapes. You know, once they get into a game plan, especially teams that have – and I'm not saying the Titans do wristbands, you know, because you can't make a lot of adjustments off a wristband calling game right there because, you know, there aren't a new set of wristbands every series. So I always had a good feel for the middle of the second quarter on as to how – when I was in a groove as to how an offense was going to attack us and call a defense to go after them. But I didn't think it was the play calling. Other than the direct snap, I didn't really, you know, like that. I thought there were some penalties. I think I'm still a big believer that you win and lose games in the offensive and defensive line, and I think the offensive line is continuing to struggle.
Is there any way for them to get better with the players they have on the offensive line, or is it just they need to wait for the offseason and get a new offensive line?
Well, I thought they had a better strategy running the ball. I've talked about this since even the Green Bay game. I think what you've seen happen is when they go with those big personnel groupings, what I mean by that is two or three tight ends in the game. They even put a tackle in the game at tight end at some times the other day. What ends up happening is the other teams match that personnel with big defensive personnel. And ultimately, the big defensive personnel that the teams put in is better in their matchup than the offensive personnel in those situations.
So Titans lose fat on fat is what you're saying.
That's correct. And then what I saw – I didn't think they did against Green Bay, but for the last 3 weeks in a row, I definitely think they have. And what they started to do, a lot of their bigger runs were in three wide receiver sets. The 50-yard run, a couple things were 85. Okwankwo was in the backfield as a lead blocker, doing different things along those lines. Because you keep smaller people in the game, then you basically have four down linemen, two linebackers, and five DBs in a game, and that's where they have better matchups. In the run game, they have better matchups. In the pass game, my concern is twofold. I think the left side of the line, not just the left tackle this week, but the left side of the line got beaten pretty significantly. I thought Arden Key, I thought Trayvon Walker, I thought Josh Allen were dominant. Whether it was with a bull rush, whether it was with a twist game, I thought they won that battle. And I think the Titans, if they're being real with themselves, would say that as well. And I talked about, because of that, I think the quarterback's mechanics are suffering. I think he's losing a little bit of confidence. And then Burks not being in there, that was tough because the receivers aren't winning enough of their one-on-one battles. When it's Hooper, when it's Okonkwo, when it's those guys and they're catching choice routes or flat routes or hitches at 8 to 10 yards, that's great. But nobody in the NFL is winning games by just methodically driving the field like that. They need big plays out of Woods. They need big plays out of Westbrook-Ikhine, and they're just not getting them. Tyson Campbell looked like the player people think that he can be. I mean, he was really pretty good out on the perimeter and did an excellent job. I think Derrick Henry, the 100-yard game's positive. But as I said to you, I think two of his runs accounted for 72 yards, and the other 15 accounted for 49 yards. So although he had statistically a better day, there were some inefficient runs. And what they scored? They scored on the first drive of the game. That was a methodical drive, drove right down the field. The second, then they scored on the third drive of the game. They had the explosive run, and then they had the crossing route to the tight end. And then they scored at the end of the game when the game was kind of out of hand and really the Jaguars were in kind of a prevent defense.
Coach Bob Shoop is with us. One theory I have, too, on the fans that are bloodthirsty to fire the offensive coordinator, I don't think that more change after what happened last week would be a good idea for the team. I mean, it's almost Christmas. And so this team's going to make the playoffs. And I don't think that more change and more distractions would be a good idea for the team. What do you think?
I agree. I think, you know, I don't know the dynamics in the offensive staff room. I don't think, having been in that building, I don't think Coach Vrabel's calling the offensive plays. I do think he has input. He's the head football coach. He can do whatever he wants. I think the dynamic, and I've been a defensive coordinator struggling in those moments where you're not having a good week, you're not having a good seat, you know, whatever it might be. And I think a lot of times the guy actually calling the game on Sunday is a little bit overrated because you're all sitting in there. Every coach in the room, Caroline, you've got the red zone. Jared, you got third down. I got first and second down, run game and pass game. I mean, everybody contributes to the ultimate game plan right there. And I've heard things about Tim Kelly and things like that. I mean, everybody is contributing. And if they have a good dynamic in that room, I'm sure there's some, hey, I need a little bit of help here. What are you thinking? Or what are you thinking? And I think it's a little bit of that, you know, think tank right there. And I think at this point, they need to close ranks and continue to do that. I think any more changes would be the wrong thing at this particular time.
Because that would be a distraction, and distractions are bad, right?
Distractions, especially when it's coaching or player distractions. The reason I didn't think it would be a distraction is because I didn't think the general manager impacted the day-to-day operation of a football team in preparation for a game. As I said, I think everybody had a relationship with John Robinson. Anybody who's a part of this organization is here in some way, shape, or form because of him. You know, but I think, like I said, when the players got on the practice field, when the players are in the meeting, I find it very hard to believe they're sitting there hearing, you know, the first and 10 game plan or the third down game plan and going, boy, I feel bad for John and his family. Now, the discussion in the locker room, yeah, sure. You know, on the way home from work, when you get home and talk to your wife, when you talk to your family and things along those lines, you know, but these are grown men. They have the ability, in my opinion, to multitask.
Has it ever happened, though, in your career where you're coaching somebody and you're a defensive coach, so say it's like a linebacker or something like that, and he's not playing well enough, and it's because he and his girlfriend broke up or his wife is moving away, you know, whatever, and he's not playing better because of it? Well, I don't think on third and nine he's sitting there thinking to himself, like, man, I wish he would take me back. But I do think it affects the player.
I think I can speak for myself. I mean, I think in not when you're at work, not when you're in the building, not when you're operating with your teammates or your colleagues as a coach, but I think there's those moments when you're driving home from work. I think those moments when we all have whether you're a sports radio host or whether you're a football player, I mean, we all have lives outside of what we do. Those players all, football's what they do, not who they are.
But, and, you know, some guys can turn it on and off, and some guys
I do. I agree with that. Some people can compartmentalize as well as anybody. I mean, Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods are the greatest of all time at compartmentalizing. There's no question about that. But, yeah, so, I mean, obviously, you know, they're not robots. They're human beings. They're affected by the relationships that they have. And I think it's the job, when you're a college coach, it's the job to, as I said, identify and help the student athletes through that particular crisis that they're going through in their moment. But for the pro football players, this is their job, and it is their responsibility, you know, during the time that they're in the building, during the time that they're on the field practicing, and on Sunday from 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock to be the very best version of themselves. And this week, as I said, you know, anybody can put on the film. It doesn't take a former college football coach to identify that the Jaguars were the better team.
Coach Bob Shoops with us, 615-737-1025. We'll get to some of your phones for Coach if you got them, 615-737-1025. Plus, the declaration that I have made about the 2022 Tennessee Titans season, what does Coach make of that? And if you're still looking for Christmas gifts, check out Nashville's Best Deals and get half-off gift cards to Joyland, Old School Pizza, Seafood Sensation, River Queen Voyages, and more. Visit thegamenashville.com/deals now while supplies last.
Is there a challenge now to keep the positivity you're talking about and the confidence level high when essentially the message here last week from ownership was that the roster isn't good enough to keep doing that?
I don't think we have any other choice. It's what we have to do. Let's figure out who we have and get them ready to go play a game, take care of the football, try to have some ball production on defense. You know, it's been a long time since we've, you know, created a turnover or hit anybody hard enough to knock the ball loose or intercept it or tip it up in the air and catch it.
Boy, that was inspiring. Coach Bob Shoops with us from Vrabel. Coach, you seem fired up by that quote. I heard a defeated Mike Vrabel when asked about, hey, you know, ownership basically said your team's not good enough. How do you keep the positivity?
Well, we don't have any other choice.
That sounded defeated. Did you think it was defeated?
It sounds pretty grumpy.
You seemed like just the way you heard that cut, we come back from break, almost felt like somebody in church that was like, amen, amen. I don't want to speak for you, though, with your take on that.
I think when you're the head football coach of a NFL team, where you're the head football coach of a college team, when you're in charge and you're the face of the organization, and immediately afterwards they're asking you challenging questions, it's tough. I mean, we're all human beings, and you know, when I look at the team, he's right. They do need to move forward. I mean, what do you say? We don't have a choice.
Mean,
you know,
the more positive and tell ownership, hey, we don't stink, guys.
And I think, you know, like I said, the only thing I saw Sunday that was a little bit different than I'd seen in previous weeks, I thought, was the body language on the players on the defensive side of the ball. And that's 2 weeks in a row now. The defense had been carrying them. Now, injuries play a part. There's no hiding that, whether it's Danico Autry, Zach Cunningham, now Long. Now, you had Fulton out last week. You had Avery out last week. So I get it. But injuries, the Titans are not the only team in the NFL, you know, that has injuries in week 14 of the season. And you know, we talked about the offense in the last segment, and Coach Vrabel said it in that bite right there. I don't think there are any sacks on Trevor Lawrence. You know, they didn't get a significant amount of pressure. I thought the linebackers were okay. I thought Cole got exposed. I know he was very upset after the game and put out a tweet. He got exposed by Lawrence on a couple quarterback runs in the third quarter. But all in all, I thought the linebackers were okay. I've said this before. My concern with this defense has always been at the corner position. I use the term with the guys that I've coached, CSI. They're there to identify the body. That's what they look like. You see a lot of catch tackles go on, but you don't see a lot of pass breakups and plays, and I thought the same thing happened the other day. You know, Mitchell had the big PI in the third quarter, and the touchdown right before the half, the ball went right through McCreary's hands for a touchdown, and that's something, you know, very few sacks, very few takeaways. I did think Coach Bowen went to some really good zone pressures in the third quarter and did a decent job on those things, But Trevor Lawrence got out of trouble, found the seams, found the open holes, and good quarterbacks in the NFL are going to beat zone most every time.
So here's my thing yesterday. I think season's over, Bob. I think it's over. And I'll tell you why I think it's over. Because no matter which way Amy Adams Strunk wants to sit down 5 days after she made the decision, or 3 days or whatever it was, to fire John Robinson and say, you know, I wanted our team to move forward. I wasn't happy with the direction of the team. You know, I thank John and his family, or whatever, you know, whatever they want to say it was. The message is, I don't like the players on my team. I don't believe in the players on my team. And once you say something like that, I don't think you can ever unring that bell. And I think that's what happened to this team. So I think they'll still make the playoffs because they're in a terrible division, and they're in position that even if they lost every game, the worst thing that could happen is that final week with Jacksonville's a win and in kind of game. So I think they'll still win the division, but I think they'll get smoked at home by the Ravens or the Bengals or whoever, you know, 41-3. I think that things are only getting worse from here, and I think they're going to get crushed by the Chargers this weekend. I think the morale is so low, kind of like your UT team in 2016 or 2017, where it just all fell apart. You guys beat Florida and Georgia in 2016 and couldn't beat South Carolina and Vandy, even with everything on the line. I think that's what we're looking at here. I think season's over. Your thoughts?
I don't. Like I said, with 4 weeks remaining in the season, you're two games up in your division. I mean, of winning a third consecutive division title. These players have great pride.
Your UT players have great pride when y'all were playing for a trip to the Sugar Bowl and lost to Vandy?
Yeah, I'm sure they did. I mean, I think competitors, you know, go out on the field and have a sense of competition, and they go out with great pride and really want to be the very, very best version of themselves. And I've seen Mike Vrabel. I know these guys, when their back's against the wall, I think they're going to step up. I don't think it's going to be an easy road. And I think these next 4 weeks are going to be significant as far as the direction, not just of the 2022 version of the Tennessee Titans, but of the future of the organization. I mean, it's not going to be. They're 7-6, and they have to go to San Diego. They have to go play the LA Chargers this week. And the Chargers' strengths happen to be the Titans' weaknesses. And I think the Titans might be built a little bit flawed on defense because they do stop the run really well, but now teams don't even try to run the ball. I mean, the last couple of weeks, teams haven't even tried to run the ball, and the Eagles and Bengals just threw the ball, you know, all over the lot against them. And then they play Houston at home.
They'll win that.
That should be a win. Sure. I mean, the Houston's 1-11-1 right now. Then they play Dallas at home.
And that'll be a loss.
It could be, and it all depends on maybe what Dallas has to play for at that particular point. And then it could come down to the final week of season in Jacksonville. And the problem is that the AFC South is so weak that the second place team is not a wild card, is not going to be a wild card team probably. So you got to win the division. So the truth of the matter is you have to win one of these next three games. You have to beat Jacksonville, and you're in the playoffs, and you have a home playoff game.
I know, but it's so bad there they'll get killed when they get into the playoffs. They lost by 4 points to the Bengals 2 weeks ago, and the Titans didn't play a great game against Cincinnati. I think we can agree with that.
Yes.
But Cincinnati's probably a better team. Probably, you know, was a toss-up game. You know, if T. Higgins doesn't make a great catch here, or if they don't hit the snapper there, or whatever, miss a 35-yard field goal, all those things. I think if they play the Bengals again, given where the team is right now and where I saw that headspace on Sunday against the Jags, I think they'll get run out of the building. And I think the fans in town feel that way. And again, it doesn't help when the owner is basically telling you after the Eagles game, guys, we suck. And that's what happened. And that's why I think it's over. Because if it's the Bengals or the Ravens, and I think the Ravens are a flawed team.
I do.
But if it's the Bengals or the Ravens, I think they're going to get smoked in the first round, and that's it. Like, I think they did this to themselves. That had they not fired the general manager, had they gone status quo, even if the owner knew she was firing him the day the season was over, I think they would have won on Sunday against Jacksonville. I certainly don't think there would be this immense sense of panic. They would be able to stay together and, you know, hey, nobody else believes in us, but we believe in us. But when the owner doesn't believe in us, then what the hell are we going to do?
That's what it has to be. It has to be a...
But how can you have that if the owner doesn't believe?
Us against the world mentality. I mean, we've always seen that. I mean, we've seen that in college sports, pro sports. Yeah, for sure. And to me, I think Mike Vrabel, we've seen it in pro football. I think Bill Belichick has said this before. You know, past result has little to do with future outcome. It's how we prepare this week. It's the matchup is against the Chargers and so on and so forth. Now, my bigger concern is from an X and O standpoint, the matchup against the Chargers. You're facing one of the young guns of all pro football right here in Justin Herbert with a great group of receivers who could throw the ball over the lot. They're playing with a significant amount on the line, you know, at home, traveling across the country. And maybe right now traveling across the country is exactly what this team needs. And if Rabel's a Belichick disciple like that, it's his job to get the, you know, today's the off day when they come back tomorrow and have meetings and get ready for their first practice of the week in preparation for the Chargers. We're on to L.A. We're on to the Chargers. And I think we'll know a lot more about the mentality of this team, you know, after that game. I do. And at that point, we're regardless of the outcome, the team's going to still be in first place in the AFC South.
Phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jerry has been waiting patiently and is up next for Coach Shoup. Go ahead, Jerry.
Hey, Coach, how you doing? One thing I'm seeing is that the players are in their own heads and the coaches are not communicating well enough to prepare them. That's why they're losing in the second half and just barely holding on in games. What do you think?
Well, Jerry,
I said that before. I said I can – the body language – I'm not in the meeting rooms and I'm not, you know, on the field in the huddle, but I could you could see the body language of the defensive players come the second half of games. I think they've been sold this is the Titan way. We're going to run the ball. We're going to stop the run. We're going to be tough. We're going to do this, that, and the other thing. And I've seen it before. I've seen – when I coached at Penn State, when I coached at Vanderbilt, I knew if we gave up 21 or more points, we were it was unlikely we were going to win. And you know, and at Tennessee in the year when we had Dobbs and Kamara and Josh Malone and that good group of offensive players, it was a different game. You said, okay, we're going to outscore teams, so let's just not give up explosive plays. If we give up 28 or less, we're going to be fine. And I think they're getting a little – the defensive players' body language looked a little discouraging this week. And as I said before, I think the quarterback – just I look at it with his mechanics and his footwork. He looks a little bit – uncomfortable. He looks like he's lost a little bit of confidence, and his footwork, regardless of the depth of the routes, looks like it's identical on every single play. And I do think the coaches need to these are grown men and they're professional athletes, but the coaches at this point, this is a great challenge, whether you're, again, you're a high school, college, or pro football coach, getting players back after a difficult loss like this. Oh, yeah, by the way, it's a difficult third loss in a row. We got to get them back on track, show them what's right in front of them right there, and get ready to play the Chargers on Sunday.
Coach Bob Shoup's with us. Coming up next, the college football world lost a legend today in Mike Leach. What Coach Shoup thinks about that, remembering Mike Leach, we'll do that coming up. Stillman & Company, live from Bridgestone Arena, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
I would like to say this. You know, you think about Air Raid, you think about Mike Leach, you think about how innovative offensively that he was. And he was one of those guys that you found yourself wishing would win, wishing would be in the national championship picture from a media perspective, just because you never knew what he was going to say. Mm-hmm. You never knew what subjects he was going to tackle. You never knew what he wanted to broach. He didn't run from talking about anything. He always had something to say. And he was clearly a bright guy, very knowledgeable about a lot of different things, and his interest spread. It wasn't just about football. It was about politics. It was about news. It was about life. And he always had something to say. I was always interested in hearing what he had to say. I never had the pleasure of meeting him ever, but obviously I'm familiar with his era at Texas Tech and obviously Washington State before Mississippi. And then, you just look at it from that perspective, Mississippi State rather. And you just look, you heard what happened, and I said, my goodness, it's such a shame to be at practice on Saturday and then to have that happen. Life is just, it just reminds you how short life is.
Stephen A. Smith earlier today on the passing of Coach Mike Leach, the head coach at Mississippi State. Shocker pretty much to everybody. Coach Bob Shoup is with us. You were at Mississippi State before Coach Leach got there. And let me start by saying this. I've never met Coach Leach. I never interviewed Coach Leach. I saw Coach Leach from afar, and I think there are two different stories to be told there. I think there's one about the air raid and the offense and the numbers they put up and what they did at Texas Tech. And I think the second story is the personality of Mike Leach that I appreciated as a fan, because these college football coaches, I hate to break it to you, sometimes you guys take yourselves too seriously.
Wait.
You know, sometimes it's like, you know, and I get it, you're making a lot of money, and if you're a head coach, you're making $5 million. And if you don't beat your rival, then you get fired. And even though it's great to collect the extra $20 million, it'd be nice to make even $40 million or something like that. And I think, you know, it's the power of the job and the excitement of coming to work and all that. But Mike Leach wasn't like that, at least from what I saw from the outside, of just every second was, you know, just this rod up the rear end, couldn't be a normal dude. If anything, he was his own unique dude. And I just kind of wonder kind of how the people in college football that either knew Coach Leach or that kind of saw how Coach Leach operated, kind of how much of an individual I feel like they lost today.
I mean, incredible. I never met Mike Leach. Never spoke with Mike Leach. I knew him from his reputation and watching his teams play. And I knew him from 1 to 2 minute you know, video sound, video bites that you'd see on the internet and things along those lines. Sure. First of all, I'd say my condolences to his family. And if you've ever lived in Starkville, Starkville's a very small community. What a tragedy. What a sad loss for anybody associated with Starkville, Mississippi, and Mississippi State Athletics and Mississippi State football. The thing I like about Mike Leach is what you just said. Coaching is what we do, not who we are. And he definitely didn't take himself too seriously. He's a very unique individual. He possessed a law degree from Pepperdine. He taught a class at Washington State. He's a New York Times best-selling author, you know, with a book about Geronimo and a book somewhat of an autobiography called Swing Your Sword. And if there's something I would say about him from observing sound bites, things along those lines, he swung his own sword. And really, you know, when you think about the game of football as it is today, he was so far ahead of his time with the air raid and recognition and of good young coaches and people along those lines too. His coaching tree is off the charts. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether it's Dave Aranda, Cliff Kingsbury, Lincoln Riley, Garrett Riley, you know, the people he had on those Texas Tech staffs in the early 2000s, off the charts. And he changed the game with the air raid offense, and a lot of the principles of the pass game that we see today are based on things that he was doing 20 years ago. My picture of him is looking at him on the sideline with his play calling sheet, and it's like a little index card. You know, you see some guys in the NFL with those big giant menu type cards, and, you know, or a defensive coordinator with his big giant block card, and you see him with his little menu card. He apparently only had a handful of plays and wanted to know whether you're in man-to-man coverage, two deep zone or three deep zone, and let's go. And like I said, my observation in the last 48 hours, I've probably read more about him in the last 48 hours than I had the rest of my life, was that if you met him, you remembered it, and he made an impact on you. He made you feel like you were special, and he made you feel like you were important.
When you would coach against the air raid, what made it so difficult to slow down? And yet, why? We've seen, so many yards and points put up with air raid teams. I'm not sure we've seen a national champion with the air raid. So what makes it so hard to stop, and why has it not won a title yet?
I mean, there could be a lot of reasons why it hasn't won a title, just other teams being better. I think Coach Leach in and of himself was never the have in the Big 12 at Texas Tech. I mean, they were playing against, you know, Texas, the Oklahoma, Texas.
Yeah, and the one year that he had Michael Crabtree.
That's right. And Graham Harrell, and that team, you know, ended up being a top 10 team in the country. At Washington State, you know, he's against all the teams in the Pac-12. And I promise you, in the SEC West, you're going against the best that there is in college football. What made the offense so unique to me was, you know, when you think of the air raid, you're imagining the guy throwing the bombs down the field. But he did such an outstanding job with his quarterbacks and people along those lines that they understood to take what the defense gives them. And they weren't afraid to make the air raid an extension of the run game to a certain extent. As a matter of fact, there were two running backs at Mississippi State here this year were the two of the top receivers on the team and are fourth and fifth in Mississippi State history as far as receiving over the course, career receptions and career receiving yards. So they're as big a part of it as anything. And like I said, I mean, he's always been an outstanding coach of the quarterbacks. Ironically, the last two quarterbacks he had, Gardner Minshew at Washington State and then Will Rogers at Mississippi State. You know, one's at Washington State, one's at Mississippi State. They went to the same high school, so it's kind of weird.
What do you make of Josh Heupel was recruited to Oklahoma because of the air raid, because of Mike Leach, and now it seems like he kind of runs a little bit of the air raid out there at Tennessee?
Oh, for sure.
How much of that, like those wide splits and everything else, are you surprised that we haven't seen more of that trickle into the NFL?
Oh, yes, in the NFL, I think that's the next big thing. You know, there's always the next big thing, and to me, I think the use of the formations that Coach Heupel gets into are pretty simple. It's just the splits of the receivers are so drastic. They're standing outside the numbers or near the sideline, and people like Kendall Briles and Art Briles have used those type of things for years, and it helps you identify, you know, the coverage. It helps you to identify whether it's man-to-man coverage or zone coverage, whether someone's blitzing. And I definitely think, now the field dimensions of the NFL and the field dimensions of college are different, so I think that would limit some of the things you're able to do, but I think that's the next big thing in college football. And college football and pro football are probably more aligned more aligned than they've probably ever been nowadays. And a lot of it has to do with 25 years ago and a guy like Mike Leach.
How tough do you think it is for college football to not have the personality of a leader like Mike Leach?
It's sad. I mean, it's sad. I mean, like I said, I've never met the man, but there's part of me that feels like I know him just by watching, you know, 20 to 30 second to 1 minute, you know, sound bites and interviews with him on Twitter in the last 2 days. I mean, and for all the coaches who do take themselves too seriously and are talking about X's and O's and discipline and this and that, and I'm not saying he wasn't this, I don't know all that stuff, but he was certainly an eccentric personality and someone that the college football world and beyond the college football world that sports in general will miss.
Coach Bob Shoup with us. As always, Coach, great stuff. By the way, I do wonder this. Do you, when you get fired from a job, or like Penn State to Tennessee, choose to move from one job to another, what do you do with all your clothes? Like, do you have, like, separate clothes that are not, you know, I guess in this case, South Florida or Mississippi State or Tennessee or Vanderbilt or Penn State? Or do you have all those clothes and still wear around a Penn State jacket? Or what do you do?
Combination. I mean, we give them – I've given them to the guys coming in who've taken the job. We've just gotten rid of them, you know, Goodwill, whatnot.
I was just thinking because your sweatshirt's an Adidas sweatshirt, but it doesn't have a logo on it.
I do not have a logo on today. I'm a free agent right now.
There you go. Coach Bob Shoup, as always, with us. Coming up next, football people. Coach Shoup's a football guy. Football people have weighed in on the Titans' recent decision-making. It ain't good. We'll get to that next. Stelman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.